The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every single week we work hard to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. Just a quick reminder for everybody everywhere in the country who is listening to the sound of my voice right now, the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati has its nationwide online chapter meeting tomorrow night. That's Thursday, March the 20th, in case you happen to be listening to this on the podcast and saying, oh, I want to go to that, but now it's a week later and it's too late. The topic is awesome. It is expert advice on how to have less stressful, more profitable rentals. We have a panel of folks that, gosh, between them, they own or manage several hundred properties, and they have each been doing it for 10 years or more, in one case over 20 years. And they're basically going to share things that they have discovered in the way of systems, policies, procedures, tech, you know, anything you can think of that makes it easier to manage your rental properties, because it's a real shame that, like, everything else we talk about in real estate, you know, we talk about wholesaling and retailing and creative finance and, I mean, anything you can think of, everybody's thought is like, well, I don't know how to do that, so I'm going to learn. But when it comes to rental management, somehow, I don't know, people seem to think it's like, it just works for you or it doesn't. And we don't really sit down and learn from other rental property owners what things are working. And I've seen people sell whole portfolios of profitable rentals because they just couldn't take the management anymore. And if you can't stand the management, it's entirely possible you're doing something wrong. there's something going on with your systems that are making your rentals overly dramatic. So that meeting is online. You can get your link simply by going to cincinnatirea.com. For those of you who do not live within 100 miles here, Cincinnati is spelled C-I-N-C-I-N-N-A-T-I, rea.com. I see people put not enough N's and too many T's in that. And it is free to attend, so get your link. It'll be a good time. One of the interesting things about the way the real estate investing business has evolved since I got into it many moons ago is that it used to be that there was like the real estate property world, and then there was like the real estate note world. So there was a group of people that they were totally into real estate and owning the bricks and mortar, and they all went to certain meetings and certain conferences and whatnot. And there was another group of people who they eschewed properties in favor of notes and mortgages. And there wasn't a lot of intermixing. In fact, I remember seeing some of the more advanced investors at our local group here. They like just disappeared. They stopped coming to meetings. And then I would see them at the grocery store and I would say, how come you haven't been to a REIA meeting? And they'd say, oh, well, I'm not in real estate anymore. I'm in notes now. So, like, I don't know, I can't hang out with you people or something. But over the years, there's been kind of a good intermingling of those two worlds, and people have more and more understood that you don't invest in real estate or in notes. You invest in real estate and in notes. And if you only invest in one or the other, it's a really good thing to know people who are on the other side of it, because there's business that you can do together. So I know a lot more people now in the note world than I did when I first got started ages and ages ago. And one of the folks that I've met relatively recently, like in the last 5 years, is a couple who, between the two of them, they have 65 years of note buying experience. And they just have this national reputation as being, you know, good folks to work with, great teachers, all of that stuff. It is Fred Rui and Tracy Z, and they're joining me by phone today. Fred and Tracy, how you guys doing?
We're doing well, Vina. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having us on the show.
I'm very pleased to have you. This is your first time, actually, I believe, on the show. Certainly as a couple.
As a couple.
Tracy's been on it before, yeah.
Yes.
I just want to say it's like 60 years combined, which is like just over 30 each. We're not over 60, you know, each.
So, yeah, I said
getting bigger and getting more uncomfortable every time it comes up.
I know. I said 65 years combined.
I know, each of you,
because you all didn't start when you were negative 20 years old. That didn't happen. So let's just start by talking about how you each got into the note investing business.
Yeah, for me, I was living in California in the 90s, and honestly, I just stumbled on it by accident. I was trying to figure out how to buy real estate and rentals, and, you know, everything was expensive then as it is now proportionately. And I was taking some night classes on investing in real estate, and there was a gentleman by the name of John Richards that I just wandered in his class, and he talked about real estate, and that's really what the whole class is about. But during 1 week, he taught us the financial calculator and taught us about notes. And the idea of having all the advantages of real estate and owning the cash flow, kind of like being a bank, and not, you know, the tenants and toilets and, you know, getting a 2 a.m. call because there's a roof leak or something, was pretty attractive to me.
Mm-hmm. And Tracy, what about you?
I had a little different start. I grew up in a small rural town on the Canadian-Washington border, and there's a lot of seller financing up there. And I worked for an attorney that did closings and title search and also pulled lists of seller finance notes for investors. And then I moved to the big city of Spokane, Washington. I say that in air quotes, of course. Mm-hmm. And I went to work for a large institutional buyer that bought those seller finance notes at a discount. And that was in 1988. And when I got started working for them, the gentleman that owned that company, he'd been doing it since the 1950s. So we didn't invent this. We might have been in it a while, but there have been people in it even longer than us. And my specialty was seller finance notes and how to find those, locate those, underwrite those, buy those at a discount. And I did that for them for 10 years. And then in 97, Fred and I went out on our own. We met through the note business, and we went out on our own and started referring notes for fee and buying notes for ourselves and putting them in retirement accounts. And so we've worked through all the different angles, and we love sharing our experience with people, because I think there's a lot of opportunity for the average investor to do some of their portfolio in notes.
Mm-hmm. And we've done both. We've done both real estate and notes and rentals. So, you know, we kind of see all sides of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Excellent.
We are going to take just a real quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about like seller finance notes versus institutional notes. We're going to talk about performing versus non-performing. We're going to talk about that thing you said about referring notes for cash, because I think that's going to be really interesting to some of the newer investors who are thinking, well, I want to do this someday, but I don't have the money right now. So listeners, if you have questions, you can send them in via email to vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can call in your questions at 877-772-9658. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guests today are Tracy Z and Fred Rui, and we're talking about the note buying business, because that's, you know, a lot of people want to do that, and A lot more people want to do that when they can't find rental deals that really are penciling out. They still want to invest their money and get cash flow. And a lot more people want to do that when the stock market's acting all crazy and they're thinking about pulling their money out, but they don't want to put it in something that they can't control and don't know what the return is. So I think it's a relevant topic for today's market and economy. And Tracy and Fred, I think for the sake of people who might just be getting into the real estate business, we better explain what it means to buy a note, because I think like civilians get confused by that, because they're like, you don't buy notes, you pay notes. So what is this buying and selling notes and mortgages business? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, so what it basically is we've all seen, you know, properties where someone says, you know, owner will carry, you know, or sometimes it's somebody sells to somebody else and they agree to just basically carry back the payments themselves. So they've created a note. There's no bank involved. It's just somebody agreeing to pay somebody else. And oddly enough, it's a bigger industry than people realize dollar-wise. Matter of fact, in 2004, we just got done crunching numbers on that. And, 2024, there were $30 billion in notes created. It's roughly 3 to 4% of all real estate transactions. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all viable. So if you take the last, say, 5 years, that's about $131 billion. It doesn't mean it's all viable. They could be properties that nobody's interested in having as collateral. It could be, you know, hard to move. It could be obscure properties, but we don't need a big piece of that pie. We obviously don't have enough money to buy all that anyway. But it is someone that, you know, basically carries back a note. Their intent is to keep the payments, and maybe they're getting $1,200 a month for the next 30 years. And typically what happens is a couple years go by and that person is just like, you know, I'd really rather have a lump sum of cash. And that's where we come along. We tend to buy those notes from them. They get cash. We get a note and we buy it at a slight discount usually, so we get a good return on it.
Mm-hmm. It's really important also to realize that those notes, those promises to pay, are secured by the real estate in the form of either a deed of trust or a mortgage, depending on the state that you live in. So if the people don't make the payments, we hope they do and we underwrite them to plan on them performing and paying. But if they don't, we have the right to initiate foreclosure and take the property back, just like a bank would, following all the rules in that state. So you've got a promissory note, but it's secured by real estate, something everybody knows, likes, and loves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you guys are into seller finance, because there's also, I mean, there's people out there who what they buy is they buy notes that banks are selling. Mm-hmm. So that's a different business than the one you're in. And you also are buying performing seller finance notes, because there's a business in, yeah, this guy isn't paying me. Could somebody please give me some cash and take over my problem here?
Yes.
Why do you like that particular? I mean, there's like four quadrants of a niche here, right? You could do seller, institutional, performing, or non-performing. Why do you like that particular niche?
We like that particular niche because, one, it's what brought us to the dance. And we like to combine the performing with the seller-held notes, because we actually find that we can get a little bit of a discount, pay less than full face value, and still get a good quality note. We have played in the non-performing and institutional bank scratch and dent paper as well. There was more of that in the market after the 2008 subprime mortgage meltdown, but there's not as much of that on the market anymore. Look, banks are not in business to loan $100,000 and then accept $80,000 for the $100,000, right? So they're selling off problem notes, as you mentioned, but there's not as many problem notes out there if you look at default and delinquency. So we find seller-held notes have always been around since the 80s, and they continue to be around today, as Fred mentioned, $30 billion last year. And so we find for us that's the sweet spot to get some quality at a good price. We don't turn our nose up to non-performing or institutional, but that's our sweet spot. And if you're new to investing, I don't recommend you do those harder, more challenging deals until you get a few regular ones under your belt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, we have a caller on line one. It is Neil in Florida. Neil, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hello, Vanna. Nice to hear from you. I had a question. I heard this, that the mortgage office has radically increased their monthly fees, and they're the back end office for a lot of individual note servicers. I wonder if that's true, and how do you think that will affect the investors? Will it be just to pay higher monthly fees? I'm over to you now.
I have no idea. The mortgage office has increased its fees, and they...
It's a type of software that a lot of note investors use to help manage their portfolio. So, great question. If you think about with real estate, you have a property manager that will collect payments and handle the maintenance. Notes are a lot easier. In notes, we have a servicing company or a payment manager, and we usually recommend you use a third-party servicing company. The great news is they charge a whole lot less than a property manager. They collect those payments, and they handle that, making sure taxes and insurance get kept current, and principal and interest applications are made. They send out late notices if the buyer or borrower isn't paying on time. But they do charge a certain amount, and that certain amount ranges from about $25 a month up to $45 a month, depending on the deal and how much is involved with it. And yes, you're accurate, caller, that they, I think it was Neil, right, is that they are raising their fees. And so the mortgage office software is what a lot of the servicing companies use. And we'll see if that trickles down or not. I think some of the other things trickling down that you may see the monthly servicing fee come up a little bit. Also, a lot of states are increasing their fees that the servicing companies have to register and follow. So I still think as a percentage of a note payment, though, unless you get into the really small payment amounts, it's a much, much smaller percentage than a property manager takes.
Yeah, we price it in. I mean, we know if we're buying a cash flow that, say, you know, say the cash flow is $400 a month, just pick a random number, and if we know our fees are $25, when we put it in our calculator, we know we're only netting $375 a month. So we put that in the calculator to decide, you know, here's the return we want. And it's one of the great things about this industry is we decide what our hot buttons are. Our hot buttons might be yield. Our hot buttons might be we want to see a property that has more equity in it or more seasoning. You know, they've been paying longer. But we factor that fee into it. In some cases, the person that bought the property is responsible for paying the fee, and that doesn't roll over. But if they're not, then we just put that in the calculator and know that our real net number is going to be slightly less each month.
Mm-hmm. And I promise those little bit of increases, why we don't like them, I promise they're a lot less than the increases that property owners are seeing for taxes and insurance.
Yeah.
Very true. So, Neil, it sounds like the answer is yes, you heard right, but we're not going to know if that trickles down to the level of the note holder until the servicers decide whether it trickles down to the level of the note holder, but I guess we'll know soon. Thank you for your call. If anyone else has a question for Fred and Tracy, 877-772-9658 is a great number to call. I'll say it again, 877-772-9658, or you can send your question via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. So you said something about you, I don't remember exactly how you put it. You flip mortgages for a fee, you hold them for your own income, or you put them in your IRA. Can you talk about that flip part?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, not every note that comes across our desk is one that we want to buy. I mean, we have hot buttons as far as states or, you know, maybe we want to see a certain amount of seasoning or equity or down payment. But it doesn't mean every deal that comes across our desk we can't do something with. And there's a lot of buyers out there, both private and institutional. So sometimes we'll have one come across our desk. It's like, hey, it's a pretty good deal, but it's in a state we don't like, or maybe there wasn't enough down payment. And what we'll do is we'll get all the information, and then we will send that to, say, an institutional buyer, and they'll give us an amount they're willing to pay for the note. And what we do is we subtract something off for ourselves. So on average, we might take off, say, 6% or something like that, depends what it is. But we'll get a fee for that. So at least we got something, you know, for that marketing machine or whatever it is, a referral. We pass that on to somebody else that would buy that. And it's like I said, it doesn't mean it's a bad note. It just means it's not something that we want to hold on to.
And you can look at that as wholesaling real estate, you know, selling an option. So somebody else is the investor. You could wholesale a note. So we call it referring for immediate referral fee income, but it's like wholesaling real estate.
Okay. Okay. And so like wholesaling real estate, you don't actually have to have the $100,000 to buy the note before you sell it.
No, matter of fact, that was the funny thing when I started is that I'd learned everything, and then I'm like, oh, this is great. And when I've got, you know, a couple $100,000, I'm going to buy notes. And I remember John telling me, he's like, well, why wait? Why don't you use somebody else's money and get a fee? So I remember my very first deal, and I got, you know, $4,000 referral fee, and I thought that was the most amazing thing ever, is I used somebody else's money to buy the note. And then when you get into advanced strategies, you can buy a note and not sell the whole note. So, you know, I mean, and that's a lot to go in, and I need a calculator, you know, or I need a whiteboard for that. But basically, I could buy 360 payments. Maybe I sell 240 of those payments, and I keep the back end of payments for myself. And maybe I got all the money up front, so I kind of got this whole back end of a note for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think another place where, no, I know, I don't know why I'm saying I think. I know, because I've seen it over and over. A place where people who are in real estate and want to move into the note side, or they think they want to get into real estate and then they find out about the note side and they decide they want to do that instead. I think one of the places they get confused is, like, how do you do due diligence on a piece of paper? like, we understand, you know, if I'm buying a house, I got to go see it. I got to walk through it. I got to, and they want to do that with the houses that are the subject of the mortgages that they're buying, and they can't. But like, what do you look at? Like, one of the most important things when I'm sending you a note, you're deciding where to buy it, whether to buy it, what are the most important things you're looking at?
We break this into three main areas. We call it the three P's. You've got the people, the property, and the paperwork. So the people would, for number one, be the person who bought the property that's making payments, that borrower or payor. So you really want to look at the quality of that payor. You also want to look not only at the quality of their creditworthiness, but what's their motivation to stay in the property? How much skin do they have in the game? So the amount of equity they have, the amount of down payment they made or equity they built up through making payments over time is really important as well. Fred mentioned the seasoning, how long they've been making payments. That can often make up for somebody who might have had some credit challenges in the past. So all those things we look at, and then we start looking at the property, because first I want that person to pay. That's the number one thing I want to see happen. That quality person who's got motivation to pay, that has good credit worthiness. But if they don't pay, then I'm going to need to take the property back. So now I'm looking at that collateral. What type of property is it? Is it in good condition? Is it a state that is going up or going down? Is it a state that's easier to foreclose in or harder to foreclose in? And then we look to the third piece, the paperwork. If I have to foreclose on that property because that payer doesn't pay, I've got to have paperwork. I've got to have the deed of trust or mortgage recorded. I have to make sure my lien position is in priority, and I have to have the original note, and I need to have it endorsed and the mortgage or deed of trust to sign, so I can go to an attorney who can take it to a title company, who can take it to a court and say, here, they own this note, and now we're going to foreclose because they haven't made payment. So those are the three main categories, and we use checklists. I mean, that's how I got started in this business, was doing that for institutional funds that later securitized these. So we just use checklists, you know, that you go through just based on all those years of experience of things that have popped up or don't pop up, and go through a checklist. And you can, of course, use title companies and attorneys and somebody to look at the property and evaluate it. So all those things like you would normally see in real estate happen with notes as well.
Yeah, and I think at a 30,000-foot level, one of the areas I always start with is, you know, we have two acronyms. One's called LTV, one's called ICV. So LTV is the loan-to-value. That's from the payer's perspective. So if somebody put 20% down, they have 80% loan-to-value, meaning there's 20% equity in the property. So I look at loan-to-value, and then I look at the investment-to-value. And let's just say we have a $100,000 property that put $20,000 down on, they owe $80,000. Let's just say for a round number, I pay $70,000 for that $80,000 note. Well, the loan-to-value doesn't change. It's from the payer's perspective, so it's $80,000, 80%. But I'm investing $70,000 and a $100,000 property. So my investment to value is 70%. So I look at two things on that. Loan to value is what's the likelihood the payments are continuing. Again, we like performing notes. So if I buy this note, what's the likelihood they will continue to make payments? The more equity they have in the property, the more likely they are to make their payments. And if they can't make their payments, if they have a lot of equity, they're going to sell the property to get their equity back out of it. The investment value tells me is like, hey, if they don't make their payments, what's the likelihood I'm going to get my money back out of it if we have to foreclose or work out a deal? Well, if I'm owed $70,000 on a $100,000 property or $120,000 property, the likelihood is pretty good. So I start with those two, then we look at yield, then we look at other things. But everybody has different hot buttons. Some people are more concerned about seasoning. Some people are more concerned about what their return is.
I would love to spend the rest of the show digging into all to your checklist and all the way that you do these due diligence, but I know we can't because I believe about 3 months ago you guys taught a 10-hour long class on how that due diligence stuff works. So yeah, we're gonna have to leave that one because we need to take a break, and when we come back, we need to answer questions from Bo and from JC. If you have questions, call us at 877-772-9658 or send an email. It's vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking about the note and mortgage investing or assigning, if you want, business with Tracy Z and Fred Rui. We're going to go to line one to talk to Russell in Connecticut. Russell, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi. How are you doing, Vina?
Good, Russell. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Thank you. I don't know if I heard this. It's great. It sounds very interesting. I wondered if there's any mention about cap rates or any of the things that are talked about usually by quality of area, or even if that even is relevant or comes into it.
Well, there's an equivalent in the note business to what us people in the real estate business would call a cap rate, and that is the return on investment. That is, you know,
okay.
It's pretty, very simple. I put this much money in, how the payments that I'm getting back represent what return on investment. So, Tracy and Fred, is there a particular ROI that you look for in a note? Is there a particular return that you look for in a note, or does it kind of depend? Is it a range depending on other things about the note?
Yes, that's exactly right. We never like to say it depends, but it really does depend on the quality of the deal. But on average, if you're looking at a nice quality note that's got the good equity and seasoning, we usually see returns that are 2 to 4% over what banks are getting in our world. So right now that would be something in the, 9 to 11% range. And if it becomes a property, because we do these on land and mixed use and commercial, and so those would see yields, return on investment that were higher, so they might justify something in the 12 to 14%. But you've got to remember, we really also look at return of investment first. That's that ITV, LTV Fred was talking about. And then we talk about return on investment. So at a minimum, it's the interest rate on the note. But we can always, if you get brought a low interest rate note, you can always discount it down enough using your financial calculator that you could get a higher ROI than what the note interest rate is. And so, the financial calculator does come into play. But just like cap rates, there's just specific formulas you use. Any financial calculator or software that does time value of money can help you with that.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that every listener heard what they just said. They're not out looking for notes that are 11% notes, or they'd be looking for a really long time.
I would gave up by now. You're right.
Those notes do exist, right? Like hard money loans are like 12 to 14%, but that's not the loan you're looking for because that's a short term loan. If you make the investment at 12 or 14%, you're getting that money back in 3 months. So you're like back, but you now it's sitting in your bank account while you go look for something else. That's not and those are the reason the rates are so high is, A, they are short term, and B, they're higher risk. They're loans to investors on properties that need work. And you're looking for loans to homeowners, ideally on properties that are in good shape for the neighborhood. So it's not that the loans that they are finding are 9 to 11%. It's that those loans might be, well, I've seen owner held loans that were written as low as 2%. But by paying less than the face value, by paying less than what is owed, you actually raise the return up into the range that you want. So did that answer your question, Russell?
Yeah, it did. I was going to say, especially in this higher rate environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, yeah. All right, thanks. Yeah, at least we took an obvious answer to and expanded upon it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for your call, Russell. Okay, so next up, I've got an email here from Bo and Nicole, and Bo says, this is three newbie questions. Where would new investors find notes to invest in?
So that depends. I mean, we do a thing every year where we kind of, you know, take a poll of what everybody thinks their greatest lead sources are. But, I mean, you can open up a paper and see people soliciting. You can see people soliciting online ads. The best one is networking and referrals. A lot of people mix it up with you made a really good point when you opened the show talking how real estate investors and note investors are learning to play with each other and refer each other deals. I don't know anybody that is in the note industry that wasn't previously in real estate predominantly and says, wow, I wish I would have known about this earlier, because there's a time and place when there's a rental property you might want to get rid of, or particularly flippers, people that, you know, rehab houses. They realize they've been leaving money on the table, and they could have created a note and sold a first and, you know, created a first and a second mortgage. They sell off the first, get all their money back out of it, move on to the next property. Meanwhile, they've got a second that's giving them some sort of cash flow going forward. So referrals, you know, it's anybody that sees anybody else's business or anybody that may know notes. You think about, you know, CPAs, real estate agents, tax attorneys, probate attorneys, all those people are people that see people that might have notes. But the more you, I think one of the biggest things is people that mix in with, you know, real estate investment clubs, and they start to find, you know, deals that way.
Mm-hmm. Or real estate investor conferences, or
yeah,
like any place you go where you're handing out cards that say, I buy notes.
If you're the one with money or access to money, it's amazing how many people will find you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Bo, yeah, you'll probably want to, if you don't already belong to a real estate investment association, you might want to do that. The second question you already answered, it was about figuring out how a note was a good note. And the third question is there some minimum investment that you have to make?
Well, to refer a note and earn a referral fee, like wholesaling a note, that would just be your marketing costs or time to find the deal. If you're purchasing a note, that will depend on the value of the note you're going after. We do know that on average, the average note that is out there is around $200,000, but we bought lots of notes under $100,000. Or you can do the really cool thing that Fred mentioned, which is a partial purchase. So you could buy, say, the next 5 years of the next 30 years of payments, and that gets you in at a lower amount. And then after those years go by, the notes reassigned to the seller, or you could buy some more payments. So there are a couple of different ways, but just like real estate comes in different sizes and values, notes come in different sizes and values as well. So, or we can buy a portion of a note, being sure that we avoid any fractionalization or securitization. You want to keep one note with one investor, at least our opinion, unless you're going to get deep into the SEC rig. So that is what we look for. And so, or you could buy all of a note and sell off a partial and keep the back end. We've done that many times as well. So there are ways to get involved if you don't have access to funds, either using other people's capital or some creative structures.
Mm-hmm. And in some parts of the country, you can actually find very low balance notes. I know for most note buyers, they're like, that's an $11,000 note next. That's like, that's only going to have six more years of payments on it. But it, here in Ohio, there are places, particularly in kind of ruralish areas, where you, what you have is a 20-year-old note that only started out at 60. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, the current balance is 7, 8, 9, 10,000. I've bought a few of those over time when my IRA was super small, and I just couldn't do anything with it unless it was very small. I was actually looking for those notes.
I agree. We love the small balance notes, especially if they're small balance because they've been paying for a while. They are perfect for an HSA or self-directed retirement account. And you don't compete as much with the institutional type and level of investors because they don't like those smaller ones. It's just not enough bang for their buck. So they are perfect for a private investor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. We need to take one last break. It's in case you're just tuning in, it's Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're talking today about notes and mortgages. You might be able to get a question in If you email it to vinaradio@gmail.com, when we come back, we will talk to John on line one and answer Robert's question from online. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Coming close to wrapping up our show about notes and mortgages with Tracy Z and Fred Rui. Question that's been sitting in my inbox for most of the hour. This is from Robert in Tennessee. He says, how much experience do I need before I buy my first note?
That's a great question. I recommend people, if they're buying their first note, it's not a bad idea to refer one and learn the process on somebody else's dime. There's some paperwork, and it's not an overly complex industry, but I don't know if you want to jump in on your very first note and invest your money unless you have somebody that's kind of helping you out and knowing what you're doing. So it's not bad to refer a note, get a nice fee. You know, you get paid to learn, if you will, as far as that go. Otherwise, you know, you really do need to kind of, you know, have a due diligence checklist and know what you're looking at. If you have know somebody in the industry, to talk to them and go, hey, what would you do? We do that a lot. You know, we talk to people, like, we're not going to give you financial advice, but we would say what we would do or not do, or what we like or don't like. But I like, you know, your first deal, if you can, just refer it on to somebody. Get a nice check, get a little check for, you know, go on vacation with it or whatever, but learn on someone else's dime so you can see the process.
And 10 years later, when you're looking back on that note you referred and you made $7,000 on, and you realize how much money you gave up by not buying it, don't kick yourself. That's my advice, Robert, because I'm still kicking myself over that first note that I referred.
This sounds very personal now.
Now, his second question was, how can I get the education that I should really have before I buy my first note? And Robert, I can get you a start on that education. On Saturday, so 3 days from now, Fred and Tracy are giving an all day. It's like 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. workshop that is about getting your foot in the door and getting started and understanding how this business works and so on. You might want to check your local real estate association to see if they are offering it, because it's generally a little bit cheaper if your real estate association is offering it. But if not, you should definitely sign up through CincinnatiRIA.com. Again, CincinnatiRIA.com. All the details are there. I'm not going to go through the whole agenda, but it's pretty extensive, and it's a real good, like, you know, I need to know more before I even feel like I can go out and find a note to flip. That's your step right there. Let's go to line one and talk to John in Cincinnati. John, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Yes, Lou. I've got a Georgia licensing question here. I was listening to a note investor out in California, and he's saying that I need a license in Georgia to collect note payments. So I've called the Attorney General, I've called the Banking Commission, I've called the Real Estate Commission, and I've talked with lawyers in Georgia.
And nobody knows what they're talking about.
None of them say, I need a license.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the problem. Like, Ohio has a law sort of like that, and you could call all of those people in Ohio, and none of them would be able to tell you what it said. Because it's like the state passes a law, and then they don't make it obvious where to find that law, and then all the people who are like tangential, like the banking industry, they don't do what Fred and Tracy do, so they're going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. We all have licenses. So are you guys, Fred and Tracy, you guys aware of this law in Georgia?
Yes, each state is a little different. Most states don't have specific laws to private investors buying seller finance notes, but some states do. Some have it related to servicing the note. That's one kind of license. Some have it related to collecting debt on non-performing, debt collector's license. Some have it of buying and holding notes, similar to a mortgage lender, even though we're not lending money. So that doesn't scare you, but it is to say, yes, there are some states, not all of them, that have some rules. Sometimes you can just use a servicer to take care of that. Sometimes you use a third-party MLO. And so we do get some resources for that. One great place is the NMLS, the National Mortgage Licensing website, which is a government website that get that separate information together for the different states. So, yeah, those are questions you want to ask if you're going to buy a note. If you're referring a note, the investor you're referring it to, another, you know, tip for referring or a pro for that when you're starting out until you learn all those states is that, you know, you can refer those, and then that investor worries about that piece of it for the most part. So great question, and, yes, there are some of those laws out there. I wish we could get rid of them all, but they exist, and we figure out how to work. I mean, believe me, I've seen changes since 1988. We continue just to figure out the ways to comply, or sometimes I'll avoid a mistake because I just don't want to deal with it.
And
well, I contacted a compliance, you know, company, and they said they couldn't find anything on it either. So
yeah, it's going to be buried in the Georgia Revised Code someplace. And it sounds like this law might be similar to one in Ohio, which it literally just means you have to get a servicer, which Fred and Tracy already recommend that you do.
Yeah, well, I was planning on doing that. I wasn't going to do it personally. I was going to get a servicing company to do that for me there, but the way the guy was talking about it, he said, you know, even through a servicer, I still needed to have a license, you know. And that sounded a little extreme.
You know what? I'm going to call.
I know a great attorney that handles Georgia. If you want to reach out to us, we'll let the attorney answer that. There's some ways I know in Georgia, depending on your entity, that you may be able to buy one. And if not, you might need that. So, I mean, That would be one I would definitely refer to an attorney, but yes, there are some laws out there in Georgia like that.
Okay, all right.
Sounds so depressed, John.
Get your contact information.
John, send me an email and I'll get you their contact information.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, John. Yeah. Keeping track of what each individual state is doing in every aspect of investment has become a full-time job. So, guys, we only have a couple of minutes left. So I want to ask you, you guys have dealt with thousands of students at this point, and you've seen, you know, probably tens of thousands of note investors around the country at different conferences and whatnot. What are some of the common mistakes that you see particularly new note buyers making?
I think the number one is probably people get yield drunk. People think that, you know, if you have a deal that is just okay or you're not feeling great about it and you're going to get a 12% return and all of a sudden you're going to get an 18% return, they like the deal better. Higher yield does not make the deal perform better. 0% of whatever is still zero. So I think that, you know, to me, security is more important, but I think, you know, yield just falls where it does. And if it's a better deal, then you can do a lower yield. If it's a little bit more risk, you can raise it up. But I think, you know, one of the mistakes people make is they chase the yield. As a matter of fact, they'll even keep money in their IRA and not invest because, like, they're in their brain, they're like, oh, I want to get a 14% return. And so they'll pass all these great deals at 11 or 12% waiting for this 14% deal that doesn't show up for a while. Meanwhile, their money is earning nothing. So I'd say one of the mistakes is they kind of get yield drunk on it. Tracy, what do you think?
I think that's a great point. I mean, I put money in my IRA out at 8 or 9%. You're thinking, Tracy, you can find better deals than that. Hey, the best deal for me is one that pays that I don't have to worry about. So I agree with Fred on that. I also think people just don't educate themselves quite enough as far as understanding documents, getting the original note, understanding how the note was created, getting title. I know none of us like paying attorneys, but certainly having an attorney review your first few deals so that you're comfortable getting that title insurance, understanding the paperwork. I always tell people, I said, hey, we all want to be the bank. That's the catchphrase of the current decade. Be the bank, be the bank. And I agree with that. But if you're going to be the bank, you kind of got to act like a bank, too. So you got to have some checklists. You got to understand servicing. You've got to know what to do and what not to do. And so I think that goes along. I came in this from the document side. Fred came in from the investment analysis side, and we both done both. And so I think you got to have that marriage to have that sweet deal.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add a third one to you, and that is people who started in the note business, like they never did the real estate business. I think they often don't look hard enough at the property. Because I've seen people buy notes and they're all proud of it. They're like, it's got an 18% yield, and I only had to pay $100,000 for the note. And when I look at the property, I say, boy, I hope you never have to take that back, because you just paid $100,000 for a note on an $80,000 property.
So. Yeah, or people thinking they're more secure than they are. You know, they'll buy a $100 note because someone told the property is no longer worth $100. It's now worth $200. It's like, you got to verify that. You got to make sure that's really the case.
I think that's so important. You know, I always make this joke. There's a John Mayer song that has a line in it. It says, I wouldn't date a girl who showed up at this bar, basically. So I wouldn't want to buy a note that somebody would give me, like Fred said, those really high yields, because there's probably something wrong with it. So just make sure you know what you're getting. Really good point.
Okay, guys, we are out of time. Thank you so much. You answered a lot of questions for a lot of folks, and I know you're going to do more of that on Saturday. So you guys who are interested in really digging into this, finding out whether or not it's for you and what you're going to have to do to make it work. CincinnatiRIA.com. Click on Saturday's class. You can learn all about what's going to be taught there, and you can get signed up. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.